Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Hey, Reggie, how are you doing, my friend? Hey. All right. We're in the throes of January here. Do you still say Happy New Year? That was a whole Larry David shtick. When do you stop saying Happy New Year? I think by this time, I think we're done saying Happy New Year. Probably. We're getting close to Valentine's Day already. So, anyway, you ready to go here, my friend? I am. Let us not delay. Let us forge forward. Okay? Cool. Get your trigger finger ready. I'll give you the three S's. Star, smile, strong. And here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, it's always important to listen, but it is just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and that devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you enjoy listening to this podcast on a regular basis, weekly basis, then I'm sure you wouldn't mind throwing in a few reruns here and there. I mean, I'm the rerun king. I love reruns. I grew up on reruns. Andy Griffith, Honeymooners, Dick Van Dyke. By the time those shows were off the air is when I discovered them in reruns. Gilligan's Island, all of those classics. We've got reruns for you, too, here. Go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, and then just go to the prompt for this podcast, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you will find our reruns, dating back several years, going back and back and back, just filled with information, fun, opinion, quirkiness, whatever this podcast is, it's full of it. Well, I don't know if that sounded right, but anyway, it's in there. So go give a listen. It's always good to find out where we've been so you know where we're going. And right now we're going to episode 504. I just was emailing with podcast listener Craig, who is somewhat of a radio historian. And I just wanted to be reminded when the 10-year anniversary really is. The new podcast of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic was first posted and available for public consumption on May 24th, 2016. Now, it'll be 10 years, so May 24th. I believe that even might be Memorial Day, so you have no reasons not to listen to the 10th anniversary episode, because you won't even have to be going to work. It's a national holiday. I understand that this podcast is one of the most important podcasts in the world. I get that. But I never would have thought that that they would have commemorated my 10th anniversary, my 10-year anniversary, with a national holiday. But, in the words of Ralph Cramden, I am humble. I think it might just be the luck of the draw of the way that worked out. I don't think it was a national, it's been named a national holiday, but I'll take it. So 10 years on March 24th. So we forge on, if you will. We've already passed the 500 episode mark, and now we forge on to the 10-year anniversary, which will be on May 24th. So you can count those shows down too now if you want to get into that. But let's keep our attention on this episode right now at number 504 or 504. I hate the whole. I don't like the O thing. It's 504. It's not 504. It's not 504. It's a zero. It's all numbers. It's not letters and numbers. It's zero. 504. When I was a little kid, my phone number had a zero in it. The last four numbers were 1065, 1065. And number 10 was always my baseball. I loved, Ron Sano. That was my, so, but I always remember 1065. I had Ron Sano in there, Johnny Bench in there, number five. And I wasn't really always sure about the six, but there was a hockey player on the Hawks at the time in the early 70s when I was a little kid named Lou Angotti, and he was number six. So that's how I used to remember my phone number as a little kid. You know, Ron Sano, Lou Angotti, Johnny Bench. I still do that. I mean, now in today's world, we don't really have to remember phone numbers. Somebody calls us, we just put it to our contacts, and off we go to the races. But I don't even think we know people's phone numbers anymore. Think about the phone numbers that we used to know in our heads. I mean, you're at a certain age. If you're, you know, I'm talking about people that are in their 40s and 50s and 60s or older now. We used to have to remember phone numbers. Think of our short-term memories. You know, I think, you know, forget about all this, you know, do crossword puzzles. Just think back at all the phone numbers you used to remember. And I think you'll start cutting some grooves in your memory there. You know, you can stave off Alzheimer's just by going back and remembering all the phone numbers that used to stay in your head. Think about how many phone numbers you used to know by heart. For years until the smartphone came. I mean, some people, you know, and or I guess devices started to happen because there was the Pilot and things like that, and suddenly you could carry. I mean, people always had little phone books with them, but for the most part, we didn't. But we used to know. I would to be conservative. I would have to think that. In the past, now we're talking 30, 40 years, 50 years ago, I would think the average person had at least, at the very least, I would think we had about at least 15 phone numbers in our memory. Wouldn't you say that? That if you were asked, you know, who is your, you know, what's your home number? What's your best friend, your circle of friends number, and some of your cousins or whoever? But I bet you that we used to have at least 10 to 15 phone numbers, you know, 70, you know, seven numbers each, right? This was before we always punch in, you know, the area codes. But I would say we had at least 10 to 15, and maybe even more, but at least in our an instant, immediate, quick retrieval memory. What's your phone number? What's your home number? What's your dad's phone number? What's your mom's number? You know, if you're at work or something, or what's your best friend's number? Several, or what's your circle of friends' numbers? You know, if you had a job or something, you know, something like that. You knew your phone numbers without even thinking. Now, I don't think anybody knows anybody's phone number. But I digress. Per usual. This podcast has nothing to do about phone numbers. But you know what? I've just sparked a little idea of mine that I might. Don't be too sure if this phone number discussion doesn't. Don't be too sure if you don't hear about that in episode 505. I think I've just got my topic for next week. I've just thought about something. See, this is what happens. This is how that you say, Jim, how do you come up with all those topics? Up to this point, over the last almost 10 years, you've come up with 500 at least right now, 504 topic ideas at the very least. Sometimes at the beginning when I started the show, as I mentioned to you, I used to have two or three topics in it within an hour. Used to, you know, this thing used to be like a well-oiled machine, kind of making it like a radio show early on. But at least 504 topics. That's pretty, you know, I'd say that's pretty impressive. And that you just heard the thought process. You just heard how they come about. It's not magic. You know, these ideas, in the words of that great Seinfeld episode when Mr. Lippman steals Elaine's idea for the muffin top. These ideas are in the air, Elaine. These ideas are in the air. You just heard one. I just plucked one out of the air. I have to write that down to remember it here. Let me get my pen. Because I've got an idea here, you know. All right. Episode 505, idea finished. But let's go down with number four. Hopefully, number 504 is compelling, and then that will lead you to want to listen to number 505 next week. So we cannot, I mean, you know, I've had this interesting, to say the least, relationship with the Chicago Bears. And, you know, some people accuse me of being a Bear hater. I've tried to explain, I am not a Bear hater. I'm, in fact, a Bears fan. I just want them to be a well-run, perennial team that is worthy and deserving and respectful of the loyalty and the faith and the blind faith that Bear fans have put into this franchise since its inception, but certainly in my lifetime, because for the most part, in my lifetime, the Bears have been horrible. Their first championship in 63 was before I was born, so I have no memories of that. And they were, and when I started to come into my own awareness in the 70s, early to mid 70s, they were horrible. They had some great players. I saw the very end, sadly, of Dick Butkus's career. I did see Dick Butkus play, but it was past his prime, and people like Doug Buffon. I sort of remember Gale Sayers, but I think I don't remember actually seeing him play. I remember Gale Sayers more from the Brian Song film that came out in the mid-70s with James Caan and Billy Dee Williams. I don't really remember Gale Sayers. Maybe I do, but I really don't. But I remember Dick Butkus and Doug Buffon, those 70s stars. I think I remember maybe the end of Ed Obradovich's career. But maybe not, it all gets blurred. I know I saw Dick Butkus and Doug Buffon play, but the Bears were horrible for most of the 70s. They won one or two or three games. They were horrible, just awful. Bobby Douglas was the quarterback. Jack Concannon, I remember, a terrible quarterback. They went through so many awful quarterbacks. Gary Huff. I just think of some of the quarterbacks that the Bears had. So the Bears, and then all of a sudden, after dismal teams for pretty much the entire 70s, toward the end, they got a fairly good coach by the name of Jack Pardee. They brought in, the key was to get the Bears back on track was in the late 70s. The owner at the time, George Halas, brought in a guy from the Minnesota Vikings who were dominant in the 70s, at least in the Bears division, with Fran Tarkenton and a great team that he had. Never won a Super Bowl. He went to about three or four Super Bowls, never won one, but he was one of the best quarterbacks of the time. Certainly dominated the Bears division in the 70s. Packers were bad. Lions were bad. Bears were bad. The Vikings rolled over in the Bears division, and as I said, went to the Super Bowl several times in the 70s. Never won, but they brought over the guy that's kind of engineered the Vikings, a guy named Jim Finks, and he put the Bears onto a winning track for the first time, at least in my lifetime. He hired a guy from the Vikings initially named Neil Armstrong, he was kind of a no name. I think he was a defensive coordinator or something. Wasn't much of a coach. But they did make the playoffs, I believe, in 77 by luck. And then they hired a guy named Jack Pardee, and he sort of got them a little more respectability. And then, of course, they hired Mike Ditka in the early 80s, and that kind of changed everything. But then since then, since 85 and 86, it is ironic that the Bears are have had this kind of season when it is the 40th anniversary of that Super Bowl season, the 85 season and the 86 Super Bowl. it is quite ironic that in that 40th anniversary, the Bears have experienced this miraculous season. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. It's not just, I'm not talking about, like I said, I'm a Bear fan, and it drives me crazy because I want Chicago teams to be good every year like they should be. This is one of the largest cities in the world. It's one of the most loyal, knowledgeable, and enthusiastic and passionate fan bases in all of sports, especially in North America. And the ownerships of all the Chicago teams, for some reason, they've always been toward the bottom of the best owners. They don't go out there and spend money. They don't promote the way they should. They make really bad decisions. And a lot of times they try to get by on the cheap because they know that Chicago fans will support the teams regardless. Most Chicago owners, I believe, have subscribed to the adage that just be good enough. And it, and Chicago fans are so passionate for their teams and so hungry for a championship that you just, if you're just good enough, that'll keep them coming back. And for instance, I mean, the last Bears Super Bowl champion was 40 years ago, literally this year, 40 years ago. I mean, so if you are 40 or older, or 40 or younger, you do not, and even if you're 40, you don't remember that. You were born. So most people that are 40 and younger, even 45 and younger, don't remember the Bears being even a good team. Forget being a the Super Bowl. You don't even remember the Bears being a good team. The Bears have been pretty much horrible for the last 40 years. Yeah, they had a few winning seasons on and off. They've made the playoffs on and off. But they, you know, they made a Super Bowl in 2007. But even that is a footnote. They, aside from the first play of the game, they were never in that game at all. They didn't get. The score doesn't reflect just how badly the Bears played throughout that game. They were never in it, aside from the first play when Devin Hester ran back the opening kick. After the first play of the game, the Bears were never in that Super Bowl. It's almost forgettable, and it is for many people. So this year, of course, has just been literally in all. You can't describe it any other way except miraculous. Now I should give you a caveat here. As I am recording this podcast, the Bears have not played their second playoff game against the Rams. So I have no idea what's happened. I mean, this podcast is going to be posting on Monday, the day after they have played. So if that's the case, the Bears may either be moving on to the divisional playoffs, and they will literally be one game away from going to the Super Bowl, which would literally, as I said before, is almost a miraculous thought. Or they will have, their season will have ended, but certainly it was a shocking, just unbelievable season. No two ways about it. The way that they won seven of these games, including the playoff game against the Packers, their first playoff game, just literally, as I said, the word miraculous is the only way you could say it. And as you know, as I had on an earlier podcast, you know, I predicted the Bears would be 5-12 this year. Okay. And I came on this podcast and even on my Facebook page and said, look, I was wrong. Now I mean, people have accused me of making excuses and, oh, what ifs, what ifs, what ifs, what ifs, but just to set the record straight, you know, I said the Bears are going to be 5-12. I was completely wrong. I don't think anyone, there is no one, even George McCaskey, the owner of the team, nobody, Ben Johnson, nobody ever expected the way the Bears would play this year in seven of their victories. These fourth quarter, 2-minute to go victories. It's almost unheard of that this playoff win that they did against the Packers, being down, you know, scoring 25 points in the fourth quarter, hasn't been done in a playoff game since 1940. Okay? 1940. Okay? 85, 86 years. There's no other way. You can call it luck. You could call it divine intervention. Everybody's crediting the Chicago Pope. I mean, everybody's trying to find an answer. How could this happen? This is a team that was in last place and won four games last year. And here they are within, at least as I'm talking, you know, a couple of wins away from going to the Super Bowl. That's and the way they've won is crazy. But I just to be, you know, just to be factual, those six wins were the most, some of the most unlikely wins you'd ever seen during the season. They won 11 games. If they had not won, and most of those six wins were given to teams that basically didn't know how to finish and gave the Bears an opportunity to win. If those teams just would have not fumbled, not allowed kicks to be blocked, you know, played defense, whatever, the way they should have, finished off a team that they should have beat and were ahead by many touchdowns or points, those take away those six wins, those six miracle wins during the season of the 11, and what's the Bears' record then? Oh, let's see, 11 minus those six wins is five. Who predicted that they would have won five games? Just saying. I'm just saying. Yes, I know. Well, what if and what? Okay, right. Okay. I'm not trying to make excuses, but I am trying to show you that my initial prediction wasn't that far off, if all things being equal. Don't forget, you know, the Bears didn't play against Joe Burrow, the best, one of the better quarterbacks. They didn't play against Aaron Rodgers. They played against teams that were not good. And some of the teams that were good didn't have their best players. But, okay, I digress. That's not what I want to even talk about here. But I just want to let you know. 11 minus 6 does equal 5. But, hey, once again, these games have been just... I you know, everybody that says it, you can't even describe, if you've been watching these Bear games, to watch what they've done in the fourth quarter and within with less or 2 minutes or less to go has been very impressive. There's no question. And I have to tip my hat and say, hey, they haven't given up. I do believe that these other teams, I don't know why these teams suddenly have collapsed. They dominate the Bears for three quarters, and then for some reason, they can't finish a game. But it doesn't matter. The Bears have. They deserve all the credit for pulling those games out, as miraculous, as unlikely, as unbelievable as they are. And that one against the Packers in the playoffs will go down in history, in Bear history and in NFL history, as one of the all-time great comebacks. Now, I guess if you're a Packer fan, it would be viewed as one of the all-time chokes. It's all relative. You know, history is written by the victors, right? You know, it's viewed as a great comeback win for the Bears. But if you're a Packer fan, it's viewed as one of the most embarrassing and unacceptable choke jobs in the history of the NFL. So it all depends on your perspective. But that's still not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is actually a bigger kind of aspect surrounding this miraculous Bear season, this cardiac season, if you will. And that is about the building of a new stadium, which has now been dragging on since the Bears bought the land of the former Arlington Park Racecourse in Arlington Heights, just the northwest suburb, about maybe 30, 40 minutes outside of the Chicago limits. The supposition was that the Bears were ready to finally, and this is my point earlier, after decades of playing in horrible stadiums. I mean, you know, the Bears first played, you know, back in the early days, who knows where they played, but for a good portion of their time, they played at Wrigley Field. That's a baseball stadium. I mean, it wasn't supposed to be a football stadium. The way it was configured, it was horrible. So they finally realized, well, this is silly playing in Wrigley Field. Think about that. The Bears used to play in Wrigley Field. How crazy is that? So then they go to this this Park District owned field, you know, at the lake, Soldier Field. It was not meant to be a world-class football stadium. But you have to remember, in the 60s and the 70s, there were multi-purpose stadiums. I know it's hard for younger people to understand. Football was not what it is today. Football was not the most popular sport in the country. Football was not dominating sports headlines for 12 months a year. Football was probably the second most popular sport, but baseball was by far the most popular sport. And football and basketball battled for second place in terms of popularity. And then there was hockey in terms of the four major North American sports at the time. But football was kind of like, I mean, you know, baseball was McDonald's, okay? And then football and basketball were kind of like, you know, to use the analogy, were kind of like Burger King or Wendy's. Or, I mean, this is before there's so many now. There's Sonic and all these other places. But to use a analogy from the 70s, once again, since I'm talking about that decade, for the most part, the baseball was McDonald's, and then there was everyone else. And then there was far, far, far below, there was football and basketball and hockey. And it was sort of like, as I said before, like Burger King, Wendy's, you know, you name it. Competitive, but not close to the number one. Football in the last 40 years, especially I would say in the last 15 to 20, has exploded. And it's not coincidental that it's exploded because of the popularity and the ultimately the legalization of gambling. Football has always been a gambler sport. But now that it's legal, oh my gosh. I mean, that's all you see, right? So I know for a younger person, it's hard to understand how football was not what it is today, but it really wasn't. So it wasn't all that crazy initially for the Bears to be playing in Soldier Field. It was certainly an upgrade from Wrigley Field, which was not configured to be a football stadium. The field itself, the sight lines, it was just an awful place. But there really wasn't any place for the Bears to play. So they've been at Soldier Field now for like 50 years. And it is a subpar place. It is not a stadium that a major market, this is gets back to my original argument, where a major market team with a ferociously loyal and passionate fan base deserves better amenities. There are lesser cities, lesser passionate, knowledgeable, crazed fans who go to games in much better first-class, world-class stadiums than Bear fans. Bear fans deserve much better. The ownership of the Bears has not treated Bear fans well at all. I don't care what anybody says. The organization has been poorly run for at least the last 50 years. And I would say the last even 60 years. But certainly the last 55 years. No question. Since the late 60s and early 70s, the Bears have been a horribly run team. They've had their moments. They had a Super Bowl championship, yes, but overall, horribly run, and they have taken huge advantage of their fans. and they have not given back their fan to their fans, and they have not deserved the loyalty, and they have not earned the loyalty that the Bear fans have given them. And that's why I'm so tough on the Bears. I'm not a Bears hater. I'm a Bears fan. I've been one since a little kid. I had the pennants. I had all the Bears stuff. I was, you know, I had Bears jerseys. But as I got older and the script kept repeating itself, I started to get upset. Like, what? Why are the Bears so bad? Why are lesser cities with lesser histories? The Bears are one of the, you know, George Halas is one of the founders of the NFL. Why is our team so bad? When I grew up, as I said, I never knew the Bears to be a good team at all for most of my childhood. It wasn't until I was in my 20s that the Bears got to be good. That's a long time. And as I said, they've been playing in a park district field. Should an NFL team be playing in the same place that high school and college teams play, or high school and grammar school teams play sometimes? Is that where NFL teams should be playing? But yet that's where they've been playing. So finally, and you know, there, you know, and even the Bears going back to the 70s. When George Halas was still in charge and the first mayor, Daley, was mayor, the Bears threatened to go to Arlington Heights. They've had their eyes on Arlington Heights for 50 years. And at the time, Mayor Daley, who, you know, and I've heard Mayor Johnson, Brandon Johnson, say the same thing, which is, it's such a silly, ignorant, illogical stand to take. To say if the Bears move out of Chicago, they're no longer the Chicago Bears. That is such a stupid, uninformed, ignorant viewpoint. In today's world, that is just a silly comment to even say. Because 99%, I don't know if it's that, but several teams don't even play within a half hour of the city whose name is on their team. Forget about playing within the city limits. They don't even play within 30 or 40 minutes of the city whose name is on it. So to sit there and use that as some kind of a rallying cry that if the Bears leave Chicago, they're not the Chicago Bears. Yes, they are. Because I got news for you, Mayor Johnson. Chicago, the city, has no rights to the Bears. The Bears name themselves the Chicago Bears. The city of Chicago has no legal right to the Bears. So for the mayor of Chicago to say that the Chicago Bears are not the Chicago Bears, they leave the city, is just a stupid comment. The 49ers, who, you know, this year the Super Bowl is at the 49ers home field. Now, what's the name of the 49ers team, by the way? Oh, the San Francisco 49ers. Oh, I see. So the San Francisco 49ers play in a new stadium. Okay. Just build a few, I think it's Levi's Stadium, named after the jeans. The San Francisco 49ers, who are hosting the Super Bowl. Okay. Where is that field located? And just off the top of your head, anybody? I got news for you. It's not in San Francisco. It's not 10 minutes away from San Francisco. It's not 30 minutes away from San Francisco. It's about 40 minutes away in a town called Santa Clara, California. And yet, the team has not changed its name. They are the San Francisco 49ers. The Dallas Cowboys have played in Irvine, Texas, since I can remember. We can go on and on with this. It's silly. But the stadium and this Bears stadium thing has been a lingering problem for years. The worst part of it, it's not just that the parking is terrible, that the to get there is a pain because of all the traffic. The elements, if anybody should have a dome, it's Chicago. Given our elements, there's all this BS about Bears weather. That's over with. Forget that Bears weather crap. You want to see a game played in an element that shows the best of the teams, and that's not in a freezing tundra, rain, snow, 0 degrees. That's that bear weather adage came because that's what we had. But now we have the technology to have retractable roofs, domes. Why, you know, think about, you know, I always talk about this. You know, now what do we have when somebody's, you know, when a baby is born? They have reveal parties, right? Because I would say almost everybody today has an ultrasound and finds out the sex of their child. It's commonplace. Yes, not everybody. I understand that, but in today's world, it's the norm. So much so that we have reveal parties, right? The revealing the sex of our child. Now, for decades, for centuries, we didn't have this technology. We've had this technology for about 40, 50 years, where it's really been used now, at least in the 80s. But people were still clinging to this, well, I don't want to know. I want to be surprised. This I don't want to know, I want to be surprised thing wasn't a part of the birth tradition for any other reason than we had no choice. We didn't have the technology to know what the baby was going to be until it came out. There was all these superstitious things, you know, put a ring on a string and if it goes sideways, all this other BS stuff. But the fact of the matter was this whole idea of the birth experience and it's a surprise and I want to wait and I want it's a surprise was because we had no choice. So we built a tradition around the fact that we had no choice. But now we have a choice, and now we've built another tradition. Slowly, as younger people came, and it was part of the thing, this old tradition of I want to be surprised was being clung to by people in the 80s and 90s because they still grew up with that. But as the younger generations have grown up with ultrasounds and knowing about it, that tradition of I don't want to know is almost out of the lexicon. So much so that now we have a new tradition called reveal parties because we can know. And so this idea of Bears weather is nothing more than that's all we had. We called it Bears weather because the Bears had to play in Chicago in November and December, when it is very cold traditionally and snowy and freezing. And so it just became known as bear weather. Not because it was preferred, but it was just reality. So we had to put something on it to give it a positive spin. But in today's world, 50 years later, we don't need that positive spin. The fans should not have to. I remember I went to a Bears game in the early 90s, the only Bears game I've ever been to. And I was dressed like I was going to Nome, Alaska. The only reason I got the tickets from somebody is because nobody wanted to go to a Bear game in mid-December. And I don't blame them. And we had great seats. We were like seven rows. We were at midfield, seven rows off by the Bears bench. They were great seats. But it was a horrible experience. It was literally like 2 below 0. I had so many layers on. I was like Randy in Christmas Story when he's got that one piecer on where he can't even move his legs and his arms. That's how I was. I couldn't even clap. You could, when you heard the Bear fans clapping, all you heard was this muffled poof, 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 because everybody had gloves, like five pairs of gloves on. It was horrible. As I said, Bear fans, don't get excited about Bears weather. It's BS. Bears fans have shown a loyalty that the Bears fans deserve to be in a dome where the Bears team can play at their optimum level and you can be comfortable and not have to dress like you're going to Alaska. That's just one area where the Bears organization has completely disrespected Bears fans. And I can go on. And that's why I'm mad. I'm not anti-Bears. I'm anti-Bears ownership. Because they have manipulated and they have taken advantage of the Bears fans for at least the last 55 years, if not more. So finally, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever it was, for the first time in my lifetime, the Bears ownership actually did something that made sense and actually was there certainly to make themselves much more richer than they possibly could hope to be, even though they... Oh, you know, we're just a family. Yeah, you're a family that has an asset that's worth about $10 billion. You're not cheap. Oh, you're not poor. They used to always throw that. Well, you know, this is our family business. They acted like they owned some mom and pop sandwich store. They owned a professional football team. Oh, well, we can't spend money on those big contracts like some of these other guys that. They've got all this money from oil or something. We're just a family business. A nice working class. You know, this whole Chicago BS thing about working class, blah blah blah. BS. The Hellas family and the McCaskey family have been millionaires for decades, and they could afford to pay the bigger prices. They just didn't want to. And the only reason they're even thinking of it now is that because it's so obvious. The NFL now is such a multi-billion-dollar enterprise that you can't cry poor anymore. It doesn't make any sense. The facts are just not there. The Bears team has to be at least worth five or six billion dollars, and especially after this crazy season, it's probably going up another billion. So finally, after decades, 100 years of Bears crying poor, finally, Bears ownership, in my view, made a smart and respectful decision. They went and bought 200 and some thousand million, 200 acre, whatever it was, of land with the former to build, the former Arlington Park racetrack to build the stadium. And more than 3 years later, they even brought some big guy from Minnesota who built the dome that they have now in Minnesota. They brought him over, Kevin Warren. I've got my stadium making playbook. Oh, yeah? Well, how is it working so far? Because getting something built in Minnesota and getting something built in Illinois and Chicago, two different worlds. Welcome to the major leagues, Mr. Warren. We still have not broken ground on a stadium. I don't know why this guy still has a job. That was his main job. He's failed miserably. And we're still, right now as we speak, we still have not broken ground and we are not even close, which is the point of this podcast. I knew I'd get there. So now, after decades of playing in a subpar stadium, Soldier Field, which... Not only is it horrible for the fan experience, but it's been dangerous for the players. The sod at Soldier Field is historically dangerous. We have seen games where the sod is literally coming up while the players are playing. These are guys that are getting paid multi-millions of dollars that are playing on subpar fields, and it's happened continuously at Soldier Field. The Chicago Park District should not be responsible for the Bears football team, okay? That's just ridiculous. That the Chicago Bears are still playing in a Park District field is Bush League, pure and simple. So finally, the Bears decide to do the right thing. And in my mind, I was like, wow, I have to give the, for the first time in my life, I'm going to give the Bears some credit for actually doing something correctly. And then, of course, not surprisingly, I knew they'd fumble, and they fumbled. Because that field should be 1 year away from opening. Instead, that field, the way that they're, the expanse of this thing, it is now 2026. Will they break ground in 2026? That stadium is going to take at least 3 years, at the very least, to build when they actually decide to do it. And who knows when they decide to do it. They better decide to do it, you know, in the fall, or I mean, or in the spring, when you can actually get some work done before it gets too cold to have to stop. So even if they broke ground this year, which is a part of what I want to talk about here, that new field will not be around until at least 2030 or 2031. There's no question about that. 2030 at the earliest, because you know it's not that you know, in Chicago, anything, you know, don't forget, Millennium Park, named after Millennium, opened in 2004, okay? So that's my point. But even if everything went right, there's no way they could build that stadium in less than 3 years. And they better break ground in 2026, or it's going to go past 2030. 2030? I mean, that's crazy. They bought this land 3 years ago already. It's been sitting there for 3 years. It's going to take another 3 years, 6 years, 7 years to get this thing built from when you bought the land? That's ineptness. That's just pure ineptness. That's pure Chicago Bears ownership. They did the right thing by buying it, and then they just applied their Bears ownership to it, and here it languishes. But here's the interesting thing. So, of course, we all know about the horrendous Soldier Field renovation in 2003, which is now, which renovated the stadium, supposedly made it more, updated because it was such a dump. We were more worried about these columns, these colonnades that were supposedly, you know, they're veterans, your Soldier Field, we can't tear the colonnade. Okay, take the colonnades out and put them in Millennium Park or something and build a freaking stadium. We're worried about these colonnades. They're not from the Roman Empire. So go put them on display if you're so worried about it, but build a real stadium. So they were so worried about preserving these colonnades that they designed this horrific design with this giant bowl stuck in to preserve these colonnades, that Soldier Field's landmark status was actually taken away from them because the new renovation was so ugly and horrible. And so, yeah, it's an updated stadium, and it's an albatross. It's an embarrassment on the lake. Not only was it an embarrassment architecturally, and it's not even good for sight lines for the fans. Oh, wow, we've got more suites. Ooh, we've got big screens. But if you go to the game, there's some sight lines in that stadium that are horrible if you're sitting there. Once again, disrespecting fans. And not only that, the already tiny Soldier Field with this new renovation, don't you, when you renovate something, don't you do it to improve it? The new renovation took away 4,000 seats, 4,000 to 5,000 seats, thus screwing fans again. 4,000 or 5,000 fans who would love to go to games, but now they can't because we have decreased the capacity of the stadium. What kind of renovation project decreases the seating capacity for a stadium? What are we talking about? Do you, when you renovate your kitchen, do you make it smaller? When you renovate your bathroom, do you make it smaller? Do you make it worse? That's the Bears, because they wanted to do it on the cheap, because they didn't want to pay for it. Don't forget that $600 million renovation, which was the worst $600 million ever spent in the history of this city, was basically funded and is still being paid off by Chicago taxpayers. Look it up. Not only did we pay for it, we're still paying for it. And it's a piece of crap. And then you say, Jim, why do you hate the Bears? I don't hate the Bears. I hate the Bears' ownership, because they have taken advantage of the fans for decades. So now we're on the verge. They've got the land. Now we're battling about tax breaks and infrastructure. Amazingly, because I said before, the Bears have so much money, they cannot cry poor anymore. They are willing to spend the $2 billion. This is my point. Don't talk to me about we don't have money. They are going to spend $2 billion on the construction of the stadium. That in itself, you talk about the miracle. A Bears miracle? A Bears miracle is not winning seven games in the last 2 minutes. A Bears miracle is that Bears ownership have announced that they would spend $2 billion on anything. That's a Bears miracle. So the Bears say we can't cry poor anymore, because it's just silly. Football is the biggest sport in the world. It's the biggest sport in the United States, and we're making money hand over fist. We can't hide it anymore. So yeah, we need infrastructure. We need some tax breaks. We are going to be providing an amazing economic engine for the state of Illinois, and they deserve some breaks like that. There's no question. But the state of Illinois is in such horrible economic shape that people downstate, who will always vote against Chicago as it is, but even the governor has been balking at helping the Bears, which has really been a surprise. So that's why the Bears have been threatening to, first they were trying to come to Chicago, and then, you know, they were leveraging Chicago against Arlington Heights and Arlington Heights against Chicago, and the Michael Reese and all this posturing and leveraging over the last 3 years, which has brought nothing. We are still at ground zero. Haven't even gotten a gold shovel or the giant scissors for anything. Any kind of groundbreaking ceremony is still... They've had those giant scissors and gold shoulders sitting at Hallis Hall for the last 3 years, and they still are in the wrappers. They still are in the boxes from when they were delivered. Haven't been touched. But here's the interesting thing. So now the Bears pull off this miracle season. Just as a little history, once again, it's always important. From 1997 to 2000, once again, I looked it up. The Bears were in last place every year. 97, 98, 99, 2000. Were in last place. Won 4, 3, 5 games a year. That's how horrible they were. And in the midst of this horrible run, they still, because of their fan base, because of the passion of their fans, pure and simple, because politicians were afraid to make their fan base angry, then the second Mayor Daley approved this horrendous renovation in true Daley form. You know, doing something, but then doing it half-assed. So, you know, horrible, horrible project, pure and simple. The Daleys have been the good enough. They've put that on the city of Chicago for the last 70 years as well. Just do something, but just good enough. We never done anything first class. We just don't. We don't know how to do that. Remember our Olympic proposal? Case closed, okay? But we always do something, and we always brag about being a world-class city, but we never do anything world-class. We do it just good enough. And in the thing of Soldier Field wasn't even that. It was horrible. It's an embarrassment. Still is. But the Bears were in last place. But because of this, as I said before, this passionate fan base, this loyal fan base, Mayor Daley knew that he could not play games. So he couldn't vote against the Bears, and he got this $600 million project approved. And then everybody felt good about it because in 2001, the Bears actually were 13-3 and went to the playoffs for the first time in years. And just coincidentally, Dick Geron was the coach at the time. In 2001, they had 13-3 record. They went to the playoffs. Of course, they lost in the playoffs. But they were going to build the new renovation started in January of 2002, right after this great Bears season. Even though the project was approved before that season started, nobody felt bad about it because the Bears were in the playoffs and they were 13-3. So even though the taxpayers are going to spend $600 million, there was a lot of controversy before that, the Bears' 13-3 record made everybody forget about it. Because you got to keep the Bears. The Bears are a great team now. We love our Bears. So the McCaskies totally lucked out. Of course, the Bears have been horrible since then. They got their renovation. They did a horrible job on the renovation, but the Bears didn't have to pay for it, so they didn't care. And now, you know, they're looking for a new place. We shouldn't also, you know, the McCaskies, they play dumb, they play poor, but don't forget the Bears lease, I believe, is up in 2033. What did I just say? The Bears, if the stadium is built, it might be ready by 2030 or 2031, maybe, the way things are going. So in other words, if the Bears would have got this thing done by 2028, which they should have, the Bears would have had to pay about 5 years to get, 5 years of rent or something because they were going to get out of that contract early. Now, it might just be 1 or 2 years. So my friends, I'm just think about what the Bears have been doing to you fans. Think about it. They're not as stupid as they may sound. There's a method to their madness. But here we are again. Talk about this field. And so Governor Pritzker has been putting the kibosh on this for a good 1.5 years at least, if not 2 years, to say, no, we're not going to help you. We've got other things. This state has other, we're not going to pay this. We're not going to, and he's been, and I've been very surprised at how staunch he's been, to the point now where the Bears got so desperate, they're even threatening to go out of state and going to Indiana. But in the midst of these threats to go to Indiana, more leverage, you know damn well they never were serious about that. Between the leverage, they always wanted to build in Arlington Heights. You don't spend $200 million on land if you don't want to buy it. Yes, it would have been a good investment. They could have sold it to a developer. But my point is, they bought it to build a stadium. They always wanted to go there. Then they were using Chicago as leverage. Now they're using Indiana as leverage. They want to go to Arlington Heights. But they want the best deal they can get. And if they're going to pay for the stadium to be built, they deserve to get some kind of tax breaks and some kind of infrastructure. Their demands are not crazy. But Pritzker was been playing hardball. And he's been able to get away with playing hardball because the Bears have been so horrible the last several years. So there's been no great reason for people to say, yeah, with inflation and everything else, yeah, I want to go and spend money on a Bear stadium. The Bears are terrible, even though their fan base is extremely loyal. People downstate and other people going, why should I pay for a billionaire stadium? Especially when they're horrible. And they've been horrible. They've been in last place or thereabouts for as long as you can remember. They've been through coaches every, I mean, it's been horrible. And then right now, in the midst of this, where even, you know, there was a great expectation in 2025 that they would break ground, but it didn't happen. Governor Pritzker was holding to his guns, and people downstate were holding to their guns. Well, then the Bears pull off this miraculous season, and now it is Bear fever. The temperature is 107. That's how high Bear fever is right now. This miraculous season, this crazy season, this most unlikely season of going from the worst, one of the worst teams in football, to possibly going to the Super Bowl. Bears fever has captured Chicago and Chicagoland, and there's 8 million people here. Don't forget, the state has about 11 million people in it. There's about 8 million people in the Chicago and its suburbs. The northern part of this state drives the state in terms of revenues. You don't want the Bears to leave this state. They are a major, major revenue-generating entity. And Pritzker was getting away with playing hardball because there was no great outcry, because the Bears were terrible. But once again, Bear ownership gets lucky. Just like they got their renovation in 2001 or in 2002, and it opened in 2003, and they had this winning season in 2013, and everybody just kind of said, well, okay, we had Bear fever again. Oh, we're going to spend $600 million. We're going to pay for it 20 years later. We don't care. The Bears are great. Bear fever. Buy the hoodies. Buy the sweatshirts. Buy the hats. And it's happened again. 20 years later, after years of being terrible, the same script is being written and executed. After years of being terrible, years of being in last place, just like it was in the late 90s and up until 2001, Bears in last place, horrible, good season, renovation. Bears, last several years, last place, horrible, great season, new stadium. Same script. Same script. The McCaskey family plays the long game. As I said, they're very shrewd. They may look like they're befuddled, but they're not. There's a method to their madness. And so now, Governor Pritzker, who's in the midst of an election, 2026, Governor Pritzker is running for re-election. And not only is he looking to be running for re-election to be the governor of Illinois, but he's also got his sights on running in 2028 as president of the United States. But he certainly cannot lose the governorship. He can't lose this election, or he is no longer a presidential hopeful. And he's been courting the National Party. You see him. He's become a Trump basher. He's on some kind of he won't admit it, but he's lost weight now because he knows if he's going to be on the national stage, he can't weigh 700 pounds. So there's no question he's gearing up for a national run. At the very least, he's probably not going to become president. I don't think he has that gravitas. But with his money and his bank account, he certainly can buy his way onto the Democratic national ticket as a vice presidential nominee. And then if you're vice president, what happens? Who knows? So there's no question that he's got his sights on national politics, but he's got to win this local election first. He can't have lost in 2026 as governor and then decide that, and then say that I want to be president. You don't elect losers. So suddenly now, he wanted to play hardball with the Bears, but now he's got an election in front of him. A local election for re-election of governor and another election 2 years later in 2028 to be president. He cannot make Bear fans upset. He cannot let the Bears go to Indiana. You don't think the Bears know that? You think this is a coincidence that the Bears are not only talking about another site, but it's in another state? You think that's a coincidence? They're talking about leaving the state in the midst of the primaries. I got news for you. Do you know that the primaries for this general election for governor happen in the next couple of months? You think that's this threat to go to Indiana is just coincidental that the Bears are doing some Hail Mary pass? No. It's very well calculated. They know that Pritzker cannot afford to have Bear fans mad at him by letting the Bears possibly leave this state. He lets that happen, he loses the election after this miraculous season. So the Bears, once again, the McCaskey family taking advantage of a most unlikely happening after years of being in last place, just like in the late 90s. Horrible. All of a sudden, 13-3, boom. Stadium renovation. Nobody wanted to pay for it before, boom. Then Mayor Daley says, I can't let the Bears leave the city. I can't make Bear fans mad, boom. And at 13-3, Bear fans weren't mad anymore. They wanted to make sure those Bears stayed in that stadium. They didn't go to the suburbs. That they're still the Chicago Bears, not the Arlington Heights Bears. Ah. And here we are, 22 years later, same script. And another unlikely, miraculous season where the Bears go from one of the worst teams in football the last 3 or 4 years to now making a Super Bowl run. And in the midst of that, while this stadium has been stalled, now suddenly Bear fever is at the highest pitch. And now Pritzker, who has been playing hardball against the Bears, now realizes that he can get majorly sacked. You don't go against the Bears in an election year when they have just had this kind of season. And regardless of what the Bears do into the playoffs, the expectations for next year, at the very least, are going to be Super Bowl or bust. Because if you remember, when the Bears won in 84 or in 85, the year before they got to the divisional championship and they lost to San Francisco. But when going into the 85 season, the expectation was the Bears are knocking on the door. There were such high expectations, and they came away with a 15-1 season. And that's what's going to happen next year, regardless of what happens to the Bears' Super Bowl run now. This season has been completely off the charts in every possible way. So the expectations for next year are going to be Super Bowl or bust. And the expectations of the Bears possibly leaving is unheard of. So now you watch. I've just seen in the last couple of days, Governor Pritzker now suddenly is open. Well, we were going to do that infrastructure around Arlington Heights anyway. Boy, is he changing his tune. He was playing hardball. We aren't paying for a Bear stadium. The Bears don't want you to pay for a stadium. They've said we're going to pay for the stadium. We want tax breaks and tax incentives, and we want the infrastructure around so that the roads to get in and out of the stadium and around. They want to build a whole entertainment complex with hotels and restaurants and housing. This is a major revenue-generating project. That a state that is in horrible financial standing right now, the state of Illinois, in debt for billions, desperately needs. There's no way this wasn't going to happen. But Pritzker figured the Bears are terrible. I could still play some games with them. I don't have to give into anymore. Well, you can't. Caleb Williams made sure that Governor Pritzker couldn't play games with the Bears anymore. So you watch now. Governor Pritzker, who's been playing hardball against the Bears, will now suddenly be wide open. And I guarantee you, within the next couple of months, you will see a Bears deal. Because Pritzker knows that he cannot fight against Bear fever now. He's got a governor's race that he has to win, and he has to win convincingly if he wants to go on the national stage and be a possible presidential contender. March 17th is the primary. I guarantee you, between now and March 17th, there will be a Bears Stadium deal in Arlington Heights, some way or another. There is no way that Pritzker is not going to make sure the Bears stay here. And if he doesn't get it done by March 17th, before the governor's election in November, it will happen. He has to win. I mean, he doesn't really have a big primary challenge. So let me soften that. He can show he's open to it in the next couple of months. Let me reverse that. He can show he's open to it, much more open to it than he's been, because he doesn't really have much of a primary challenge. But believe me, between March and November, when he's running for governor, a Bears Stadium deal with the state will be done, and we will have the gold shovels out, and we will have the giant scissors to cut the ribbon, and we will have an announcement that the Bears Stadium will be built in Arlington Heights, and most likely ground will break in 2026, and most likely the stadium will be envisioned to open by at least the 2029 season and possibly the 2030 season. It's January 2026. Remember where you heard it. Governor Pritzker just got blitzed by the cardiac Bears. He doesn't want to get sacked. Bear down, Governor Pritzker. Bear down, Chicago Bears. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 504. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.